Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Dig. I am your host, Aaron Makem, and I just recorded this intro about 12 times because I cannot speak. Anyway, this week I want to talk about a little sleeper hit, I think, that didn't really get a lot of press, didn't get a lot of love, didn't get a lot of people knowing about it. And you come across a few of these sci-fi films every year that, I mean, there's other types as well, but usually sci-fi films, the geek culture is usually up on those pretty quick when they come out. And so when there's usually two or three a year that come out that don't get a lot of press, and I'm always pleasantly surprised when I'm like, what's this? I've never heard of it. And I get excited when I haven't heard of it, because then that means that it's going to, if I haven't heard of it, then I figure a lot of people haven't heard of it. And, you know, it'd be maybe something that's a really good surprise, or maybe it's something that's just absolutely horrible. Although films that are horrible that people haven't really heard of, usually word of mouth spreads pretty quickly, you know, that they're not that great, you know, and then they get a cult following just for how bad they are. But anyway, the film that I want to talk about this week is I Think We're Alone Now. Now, this film's got some star power behind it. It's got Peter Dinklage as, he's one of the main characters. His name is Del. It has Ella Fanning, and it also has Paul Giamatti in it as well. The premise here is that it is, see, when I'm trying to give a premise to a movie, and I don't want to give spoilers, which makes it incredibly difficult to review movies. We've come to a time where people can be really sensitive about spoilers. I mean, like, really sensitive. Like, if you said, hey, this movie is an hour and 30 minutes long, people get all ticked off. So you have to be real careful. So I let everybody know I try not to give away major plot points or anything of films, but I'm going to give you some details. Otherwise, I cannot review it. And my point here is for you to go and watch it. So I try to look over the synopsis. There's always a bunch of different ones, and kind of give you a general idea. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you what kind of attracted me to this film. Obviously, I think that there's been some things that Peter Dinklage has done that have been amazing, and so I was kind of attracted to that. But more importantly, I was attracted to the fact that I never really heard this film before. I've never seen a trailer for it or anything. I'm not even sure how I came across it. So I was probably looking at, like, new releases or something and saw this among them, and that's probably what attracted me. So the idea here is Peter Dinklage, Del, he lives in this – it's kind of like the end of the world in the fact that everybody's dead. Not one, clearly not everybody, because he's not dead, but, you know, you get the idea. 99% of the population are dead, and – we just start off in the beginning with him just kind of he lives in a small town. He's the last survivor of this small town. And what I thought was really interesting, very much like when I talk about zombie movies like Dawn of the Dead and things like that, you know, it's always interesting, this the solitude and the fact that, you know, you know the world is a big machine, and when, you know, the machine stops and things don't need to get done, it makes for interesting storytelling. And so basically he lives in this town, and he has methodically, or still methodically, going from house to house, cleaning them out, getting things that he feels are important to survive. But also one of the things that he's doing that's very interesting we see in the beginning is that he is burying the bodies. Whatever has happened, they make it seem like it's a disease. I don't want to give too much away, but they make it seem like it's a disease. This isn't like a zombie film or anything like that. This is basically, you're sitting at home one day, you get up the next morning, everybody's dead. And what are you going to do if you're going to stay in this town? If the town has what you need and you need to survive here, well, you're not going to let all the dead bodies rot. But the way he does it is what I found really interesting. He just very methodical, has a method. He's burying the bodies, and that's kind of what we're introduced to. And then another person comes along, and he sees this girl, and he's unsure about her, and she wants to stay. And that is kind of like the idea of the movie. It's like Del is kind of into the solitude, but at the same point in time, this girl wants to stay, and he is kind of enjoying the conversation. And so then the story gets told from there. I don't want to give too much away. I do highly recommend this film. It's obviously a lower budget production. But with that being said, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really it really kind of grabbed me by surprise. I wasn't sure what to expect. So I can't say it wasn't what I was expecting because I'm not sure what I expected. But the acting was top notch. I thought that the sound was top notch. I really enjoy when some of the smaller budgeted films they don't put money towards sound. It always bugs the heck out of me, you know. But has a crazy twist at the end. And I think you all will enjoy it. It's called I Think We're Alone Now. So go check that out. I know it's available on streaming, and I'm not sure if it's available on disc yet or not. Now, those of you that know me and chat with me know that I'm not that I love video games, but I'm not a huge gamer only because I don't have that much free time. But usually it's about this time of year, come November until about April. That's my video gaming time. That's when I usually, at least one day a week, spend a couple hours playing a game. So, you know, for me, I can buy last year's game. I can, you know, not have to pay $60. I can pay $30 for it when it's half off. And I'm good for a year, probably. So I think that was last year. The kids got me a PS4 for Christmas. I already have an Xbox. And they got me a couple of games. Now, the thing is, they got me two games. And I haven't even opened the other game yet, but one of the games is Uncharted 4, which is I love this game. I finally finished it yesterday, and great story, great voice acting. The voice acting and the production is what really sells this game. I mean, the game itself is fun, but the story element with all the voice acting, there are some great great moments in that. But my point was is like I was getting really excited for Fallout, right? Because the last big game moment for me was when Fallout 4 came out. It was the first time in my life I downloaded a game long ahead of time before you could actually play it. And the first time that I waited until 2 or 3 a.m. when the game dropped and you could start playing. So I took a little nap and then I just sat there and watched the countdown go until I could play. I played for several hours and then I continued to play that game probably a little bit every day for, I'll bet you every bit, 4 months. I just, you know, I after work, even if I only had 15 minutes, I load it up and play. So anyhow, it was kind of like a nostalgic feeling when they announced the new Fallout 76, and I was real excited. I'm like, okay, and I know that there was going to be online components, and I don't really love online components depending on how they're put together. I'm not an MMO player or stuff like that. I don't really, any game that's just not like single head-to-head online that requires online for a mass thing, you know, mass gaming experience, to me is kind of cheating because basically they want you to pay them to buy a game and then pay to go online to entertain each other. So what's the game there for? You know, that's just how I feel about it. I know some people are going to disagree, but I'm not going to agree with you. So the more I read about Fallout 76, the more I realized this is not what I want. I love Fallout 4 and got real involved with it. And I didn't even want to talk about how many hours I sunk into that game. But what I liked about it was that I could, you know, fire it up and do play for 20 minutes and then turn it off and walk away and go do something else, like maybe go to bed because I'm a responsible adult, right? So, So my whole thing was just like, well, you know, I was looking for something, couldn't find anything that was really grabbed me that I was real excited for. And I kind of go out of my way to try to pick a game this time of year because it gets cold. And right now it's kind of cold and kind of crappy outside. And I really wanted something to play. So I was like, well, I need to finish Uncharted because I don't know why I ever walked away from that game. I think I just got busy and just never went back to it. So I finished that. Then I'm like, okay, God of War, gonna get this game. So I got the game, and this is all leading somewhere, people. Just hang with me, okay? So I got the game, and I finished you know, Uncharted. I was like, man, okay, now I'm going to play like 5 minutes of God of War just to get everything set up, and then I'll come back to it at some later time. So I did that, and during the credits, I see that the music is done by Bear McCreary, who also did, if you listened to the show for a while, Battlestar Galactica. Not the miniseries, but the all the other series. And I have all the soundtracks for that. I don't buy a lot of soundtracks for TV and movies, but I have the soundtracks for that, like orchestral soundtracks. I have the soundtracks for all those. I really love the music. And I'd actually emailed him a couple times about some of his music and stuff like that. And man, his career has really, really taken off because not only that, but I also started watching Black Sails. I have season one of Black Sails and then I just never got back. I never bought the rest of the seasons. I always wanted to, but I just never got around to it. Well, they had a hell of a sale on Amazon Prime. They were like $7 a season, so I bought the rest. And I'm like, I love the intro to Black Sails. And so just last night I was watching I started playing God of War and saw that he was the composer. And then I started watching Black Sails. And for the first time, I was like, well, who does the music for this? So I typed it in, and it's Bear McCreary. Is there anything he doesn't do the music for? I mean, the guy's a freaking genius. I mean, all his stuff works out so well, sounds so good, fits the show so well. And it was just one of those things that I'm just like, that is so weird. It's a weird coincidence that that he is involved with both these things that I'm currently just kind of coincidentally watching and playing together, you know. So I just wanted to share that little tidbit. But man, if you get an opportunity to listen to some of his stuff, if you haven't, highly recommend it. Big fan of the season one Battlestar Galactica soundtrack. Real big fan. I really loved all the music in there. And the God of War, there's probably a soundtrack available for that, or I can find that on Spotify. I haven't listened to that straight up. The music didn't really grab me, mostly because I'm just kind of focusing on the game. But the intro to Black Sails, I love that music. It's really good. So anyway, just kind of talking about current events here, you know, trying to get back into the groove of the podcasting thing. I've kind of been away, and I'm trying to find a format that works for everybody and something that that people enjoy. And I have to comment that I was kind of blown away by how many people have contacted me after the podcast, telling me that they still subscribe and are listening to listening to it however they listen to it, but it just popped up on their you know, podcatcher or whatever. And then they were all talking to me about physical media and how they're getting rid of their physical media. And some people were like, I don't want space, so I ripped them all. And I've had more than one person say to me, I just ripped all my DVDs to a hard drive and then gave them away, because you don't want them laying around, which is great, because you still have, technically have a physical copy, right? Because you have the physical hard drive, as opposed to owning it on a streaming service that suddenly decide to go out of business or to not have the rights anymore and you can no longer watch it, which is one of my problems. And then some people, their lifestyle has changed, right? They moved to a smaller apartment or something like that. And I'm with you. Like, it's not like I have, I mean, I have a lot of discs here, but at the same point in time, I don't buy stuff unless I know I'm going to watch it again. If I'm upgrading current things and I'm giving away the older ones and hanging on to the new ones, except for a few select items, which the DVDs are actually pretty rock solid, but the Blu-rays or the 4Ks just look better, you know, and so I hang on to them for that. I cannot speak today. I don't know what's wrong with me, but there it is. So anyway, I was kind of blown away by the feedback of all that, and I couldn't decide. I was just kind of like mulling over in my head, you know, is there an audience for people who want physical media? Because physical media is going away. I mean, it's clear to me that it's going away. It's clear to me that this is what the movie companies and everything have wanted all along, right? Because if you want to watch a movie, you have to buy it. If your friend wants to watch that same movie, you can't lend it to him. He's got to buy it as well. And they have no physical production. Yeah, their server, there's, you know, the cost to running the server, but it's not, you know, that big of a deal. So the other thing that happened to me this week is that for some reason, I have no idea how it popped in my head. But if you remember the show Millennium, I love this show. The thing about Millennium is that the very first episode of season one, the pilot episode, if you've never seen a show and you're like, I don't want to watch another show, you just need to watch the pilot episode. That's it. Because that is like a film. It is so well done. It's so creepy, and the lighting is so well done. The acting is all top notch. It comes together really well. And I don't have it on DVD yet. Initially, I saw it when it aired, and then I rented the discs from Netflix way back when. And watch them. I think I watched the first two seasons. I never did finish the third season or even start the third season on disc. But I was like, you know, I want to go back and kind of rewatch these again. I mean, maybe not all of them, but maybe the first season. It's not streaming anywhere. Couldn't find it anywhere streaming. So I was like, I'm going to go buy the DVDs. Now, last year, the DVDs were dirt cheap. The whole box set was like $30, and I didn't buy it because I was like, I don't want to have, you know, any more stuff. I don't need any more stuff, you know. Well, now I want to see it, and there's no way for me to do that because it's not streaming anywhere, and the DVDs are now out of print. So Amazon, the price waffles around $40, but it has been yo-yoing a little bit because I'm assuming the discs are out of print because that's why the price is going higher and higher. I mean, if you look online, some places the set's going for like $70, some places going for $120 because people want to see it, and there's no way to do that. Why no streaming services pick this up is beyond me. So you know, what are you supposed to do in this situation? You know, what happens? I can tell you what normally happens for most of the people that I know. We look for something we can't find. There's not a legit way to buy the DVDs that's a cost-effective manner. I mean, nobody's going to pay $100 for a 10-year-old show that, you know, that was on DVD and it's not like an HD version or something like that. So they go and they torrent it. I mean, that's what happens. People, you can find torrents of pretty much anything out there, and you can find these things. And it's kind of funny to me, like, nobody has really learned anything. I go back to DC Universe. So DC Universe has been rotating their comics, which I think is silly. Here's why, and I don't know if I talked about this last time when I talked about DC Universe or not, but what I think is silly is if I'm reading, say they have 50 Flash comics, right? Say I'm reading that, suddenly they pull that, and I'm paying them a monthly fee to access these comics, and suddenly they're gone because they arbitrarily decide that's what they're going to do. I'm in the middle of a story and I want to read them. So what am I going to do? I can't. I'm not going to go pay, you know, $3-4 an issue for a comic that was 10 cents. People are going to torrent them. That's exactly what happens. They torrent it, and then eventually they realize, I don't need DC Universe because I can just find all this stuff for free. It's like they haven't learned anything about Napster and the music community. I want to give you money, okay, in exchange for what I want to read, what I want to watch. I want to give you money. Every month I'm going to give you money, and in return you give me stuff that I don't need to keep. It's not even real. It's not even physical. You get it back. It's just, you know, electrons. So I don't really get why some of the places are doing this. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And that's one of the reasons that keeps me to physical media, because if I want it, I can get it. If my friends have physical media and I want it, we can borrow it. We can exchange it. We can watch it and give it back. What's a better way of watching a DVD set than borrowing it from somebody else and giving it back, and they have to store it back at their house, you know, when you're all done? That's the kind of the way to do it, you know. The other thing is there's a lot of I've seen a lot of special editions. I talked about Scream Factory and Severin and stuff like that to put out special editions of movies, and they're kind of expensive. You're going to pay for it, but if it's something you love and you buy a movie for $30, that might be your expenditure for the month, but you're going to explore every facet of that film. And usually when they give you something, it's got a whole lot of extras, a whole lot of commentaries, as well as the film itself. And usually, well, not usually, but a lot of the time, there's multiple versions of that film. If there's been multiple cuts made, they put it all on one package, so you have the whole shebang. And so after that's done, does that ever make it to digital? Usually not. There's been some exceptions depending on who's doing it, but when you have a smaller company, not a big studio company, but a smaller company, like Severin and Shout, they're going out of their way to restore these films or do a new transfer, you know, a 2K transfer, a 4K transfer, or whatever, and they're redoing it. Why would they then give that over to somebody else to stream? They want to make their money off the DVDs, and then usually once they go out of print, then eventually the rights come up again and somebody else will take a shot at it. You know, that's why you end up with multiple versions from different companies of films and TV shows. But, you know, again, it's like these special features. I mean, a lot of times, that's the one thing I like about iTunes is you get all the special features, you know, especially for the newer movies. And also the fact that I can download them, I don't have to stream them, and that's a big bonus for me as well. But it's just kind of, it's interesting to me. It's an interesting transition, you know, as opposed to VHS to DVD, the transition was a lot different. It was analog to digital, but it was the fact that you were actually downsizing. And every time, you know, things get smaller and smaller, the physical part of it. But you were still doing with the physical media. And now it's kind of, it's going to the cloud and it's not really there, you know. So with that being said, you know, I think that I'm going to continue to talk about some of the box sets I have. I know that talking to people that physical media is not something that a lot of people, probably 80% of the people I talk to, it's not something they collect anymore. They don't, you know, they want to watch something. There's always something streaming, and it's different for me. I try to think about what I want to watch before I watch it. I don't come home and say, man, I don't know what I want to do, so I'm going to spend the next hour looking through Netflix trying to find something that I want to enjoy, because to me that's not an enjoyable experience. I want to be entertained, so I want to kind of have an idea ahead of time of when I come home from, of course, I work afternoon, so I have about 2 hours in the evening before I have to go to sleep and get up the next morning, so I don't want to waste time, you know, like flipping through Netflix or Prime or whatever and trying to figure out what I want to watch next. I want to kind of have it set up and ready to go. With physical media, I'm ready to go. I don't have to worry about an internet connection problem. I don't have to worry about an app failing. I don't have to worry about the service being down. All I have to worry about is whether I have electricity and whether or not my Blu-ray player works. That's it, you know. And so that's kind of what I do, you know. But so with all that being said, I'm not really sure where I'm going with this. I'm just kind of making some observations, and I'm hopefully I'll get some feedback from people about their thoughts about it. If you're still into physical media, and I don't mean – there are some hardcore collectors out there. There are some people I know that just buy all the physical media they can get their hands on because they know it's going away and they want to have it in their collection, and that's kind of – you have that kind of collector's mentality. And I'm down with that. You do what you – you be you. But if you're just kind of like a middle-of-the-road guy like me that – has a good bit of physical media and it's maybe gone through their collection and given away stuff they know they're not going to watch again. But at the same point in time, they haven't stopped buying it. You know, they just look around. Like I look around and for something good, I pick it up, you know. But let me know your thoughts and opinions and how you're transitioning, how it's working for you. If you've had problems, if everything's been perfectly great with all the streaming stuff and what have you, I'm curious to hear what everybody's doing and how they're all handling the transition for this. So with all that being said, the box set that I want to talk about this week, and it's not science fiction, but it's a great show. It's WKRP in Cincinnati, which Shout Factory did several years ago. And if you listen to the show, I could not wait for this to finally come out. Fox did a season one release of WKRP probably 2 years prior to that. And they never did a season two. And the problem was is that they didn't have the rights to the music. So season one, what they ended up doing was they ended up using filler. And the songs were horrible because half of them didn't even have words. They were just, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And I understand that, you know, people kind of ragged on them, but at the same point in time, people wanted to see this show. So if you wanted to see the show, this is the only way you're going to see it. You're going to get a chance to relive it. And I remember at the time that there was a complete series bootleg going around, and the quality is not good. It was like from VHS. It's just not good. But man, that thing was like hotcakes. If you ever, everybody I knew that was a fan of that show had it. And it was, you know, we all were like, you know, it's just, it's so bad, the quality. But everybody watched it because it's the only way to see the show. So Shout Factory did it. And of course, some of the extras they gave you was they had like a little reunion panel, and they had, you know, the all the actors for that, you know, and things like that. But what they did, the big thing was a huge thing. And I know when the discs were coming down, it was a huge issue. They tried to secure the rights to it, but they get the rights to about 70 to 80% of the music in order to release this in a quality fashion. And when they did it, I remember that because I think the pre-order for this was probably like $40, but I really wanted the show. I really loved WKRP. It's just a fun show. It still fits today. I mean, it's just a great show. And I remember that I would follow the message boards on Shout Factory's website, and people kept asking about the music, and they just couldn't give any definitive answers because they were still constantly working on trying to secure the rights for everything before they finally released the discs. And who knows, if they had another year, maybe we'd have got all the music. I don't know. But part of the problem with WKRP was that a lot of times the music that was playing, because it's a radio station, the music that was playing was in the scenes, and there was no way to cut the music without cutting the scene. So there was actually a very labor-intensive list out there of every tiny scene that was cut. If it was like 5 seconds out of a scene, 2 seconds out of a scene, it went through and listed everything that was trimmed so that you knew what you weren't going to be getting, you know, once the show came out. But I'm super happy with the set. I believe right now it's going, I'm not exactly sure what the cost of it is. Okay, I just checked. You're probably not going to want to buy this because it's going for $90 on Amazon right now. So maybe that this is something that's going to go out of print. I don't know. All I know is I got my set. I'm never going to part with it. It's a great show. I really enjoy the heck out of it. It actually airs on one of the secondary stations, like, you know, like one of the 0.2 or 0.3 stations, if you watch it, if anybody has an antenna out there. And I've actually been recording a few of them here and there because they're uncut on there. You know, they're just regular TV. And since the rights still hold for reruns for the music, it's a lot better. I mean, if you're worried about the music, you know what I mean? But the DVDs are quality. I mean, they did a good job with that, and they took the time and effort. And I think that's kind of what we're looking for. And as for me, if there's a show that I really enjoy and they could give me the completely restored you know, version of that show, I don't mind paying money for it if it's something that entertains me. I know there's a million things to do in this in this day and age to, you know, for a country, especially in the USA, we're all stressed out all the time. But there are 50 billion distractions. You know, it just depends on whether or not they're quality or not. I mean, everybody has a computer in their pocket. Everybody's always on their phone. And I'm not most people complain about that because I'm on my phone, but I'm usually talking to friends and they live in other countries. And this would never be able to happen if we didn't have these devices, if this stuff didn't exist, you know. But there's a million different distractions. So, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, what you want to, you know, do with your time, your downtime, what you want to do to enjoy. And speaking of that, one other final thought that I'm going to throw out there is I have a tendency when I watch films, I don't know if I talked about this on the show or not. Part of the problem is I recorded a podcast last week and I was completely unhappy with it. So I ended up deleting it. And I might have said some of these things. So if I repeat myself, I'm sorry. I'll try to get it together better for next time. But one of the things I like to do is when I watch movies, you know, especially if it's a film that I've seen a couple times or whatnot, if it's something that I'm really, that really kind of grabs me and it really gets my attention and I get excited about, even TV series like Farscape and stuff like that have commentaries, is I try to rip the commentaries to an MP3 file and listen to them like a podcast or an audiobook. I don't need to have the video to enjoy them because I've just seen the video. So if I watch the movie, rather than going back and watching it again with the commentary, I'll rip the commentary. And over the course of the next, you know, couple of weeks, I'll listen to it again. The problem is this is very labor intensive. And the other problem, I'm sure that there's probably some legal issues with this. But man, I would love if there was a place that I could just get all the commentaries from films that I've seen. Because the thing is, it's not like you'd be downloading a random commentary, because why would you if you're unfamiliar with the movie or the TV show? It would have to be something that you already own, that you've already seen in order to enjoy that. And it's something that I've been kind of like, man, if there was like a subscription service for that, for like $10 a month, all the commentaries, you know, even if they had, you know, only a couple hundred of them, that would be something I'd be totally interested in. Maybe I'm weird like that, but it's something that I really enjoy doing. Just listen to the commentary. I'm always fascinated by what you find out. You know, I know sometimes they'll be doing a commentary on something and they get completely off track with what's happening on screen and start telling a story about how they made this shot or how they made this film or what they had to do, or some like little, like, hey, this person in the film, he was just some guy that had a flat tire that day. And we were like, yeah, we're going to change the tire, but hey, we need somebody to be in this scene. So we called him over and had him be in the scene, you know, stuff like that. I find really interesting because, you know, although, you know, way back when you did budget films and you found ways to do it, you borrowed camera equipment and stuff like that. You know, I thought for a while that kind of, way of making movies was a bit lost because of the ease. Everybody, you can shoot a film on your phone now, you know. But it seems to me that kind of, you know, know-how and do it now kind of attitude still survives, because there are a lot of films that have been made that have been shot in places they didn't have permits to shoot. They just kind of snuck in and did it in order to add just a little bit of footage here, just a little bit of footage there. You listen to commentaries, you find out about this. You find out how they were able to do this. And I find the whole thing fascinating. If you're a big commentary person and you like the commentary thing, send me an email, scifidig@gmail.com, because I would like to I would honestly like to be able to find a way to not spend a lot of time ripping commentaries, but, you know, be able to figure out something where we can contribute together. But I know that there probably are some legal issues with that. I'm not exactly sure where all that falls, you know, but I just love listening to them. I think it really, really adds something to the movie when you know how it was made, or some like little quirk that happened that wasn't supposed to be on screen, ended up being a big deal, you know? So anyway, hey, look at that. 30 minutes. I did it. I will talk to everybody next time. This is Aaron for Sci-Fi Dig. Over and out.